So how do we even start to define happiness? Well, what even is an emotion? The words affect, emotion, feeling, mood state are used interchangeably, although they are variations on a theme. In this podcast, an emotion is a psychological and biological process that involves neurochemicals, other physiological reactions, things in the body, thoughts, especially language of the mind, and behaviours. Emotions are data reactions to external things and also to internal events such as memories, dreaming, daydreaming, for example. I'd say an emotion is a building block to making sense of the world around us, other people, and our place within the world. Emotions come in various flavours, and there is much debate in the types of emotions and how to categorise them. My favourites include guilt, contentment, surprise, contempt, and amusement. The human emotional sort of landscape is vast. Defining happiness is tricky and often involves it depends parameters and variables. It seems to be a social construction which is reflected differently in different cultures, having different meanings, interpretations, and focuses. I often wonder how it conflates with Western individualism and assumptions around finding your bliss, whatever that means. Some cultures value purpose and activity over happiness, and we define and make sense of happiness, it will inevitably will come with assumptions, beliefs, and philosophies underpinning it, not to mention privileges. I mean, even the Greek philosophers couldn't agree. Is it a virtuous life and realised potential through justice, courage, and wisdom tempered with moderation? Or could it have an ascetic lifestyle, noble friends, and avoiding politics? The more one tries to define happiness, the more complicated it becomes. It's like grasping at smoke. Dare I even suggest that the word happiness is at times unhelpful. So in addition to feeling more confused and overwhelmed in trying to find a definition, let's assume happiness is more than an absence of pain. According to Brené Brown's definition in Atlas of the Heart, my go-to for emotional definitions, she states, the state of happiness is feeling pleasure, often related to the immediate environment or current circumstances. According to Brené Brown, happiness is stable, longer lasting than joy, and usually the result of effort, perhaps more connected to the external world, external events, and circumstances beyond us. Interestingly, Brené Brown writes way more about joy, calm, contentment, and especially gratitude. Sonia Lyubomirsky writes in her book The How of Happiness, as experiences of joy, contentment, or positive well-being combined with a sense that one's life is good, meaningful, and worthwhile. What I like about this definition is that it brings in action. The lack of definition and its very personal and contextual nature means that happiness as a term should be treated with curiosity and caution, especially when we use it to define ourselves and our experiences. What does happiness mean to you? How will you recognise it if you bumped into it at Gloucester Green bus station? Perhaps it is, as Lucy from Peanuts said in the 1960s, that happiness is a warm puppy. For the Oxford context, I'd like to upgrade this to an alpaca, as they seem to be frequent visitors during student welfare weeks. So happiness is perhaps a warm alpaca. I want to introduce the Stories of the Mind to you, aka the secret director. And They All Lived Happily Ever After is something you might have heard depending on where you grew up in the world. We can see already that this sets the scene for potentially unrealistic expectations. Happiness seems to be something we should have and are owed. We must aim towards and own. There's a certain undercurrent of perfectionism when it comes to happily ever after endings, especially when life and happiness just doesn't work that way. Because life and people are messy and confusing and certainly not linear. Happiness is part of the journey, not the destination, and it's a dynamic process. Let me put it another way. The esteemed poet Pharrell Williams once sang in his song Happy, "Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth." Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. But is happiness really the truth, Pharrell? We all grow up with stories of some sort, stories with lessons, stories with morals, and stories with rules. Our metaphoric and narrative brain loves stories because they are more easily encoded, remembered, and came well before writing. Stories are vehicles with crucial developmental information in how we should be in the world and how we engage in the socially constructed and sort of culturally sensitive social contracts and expectations. Stories help build templates, and templates help build stories. We can use templates as defaults when we meet new situations, things we haven't encountered before. Sometimes those templates can do with some tuning up or amending or at least reviewing. Sometimes we might hold rules too tightly and lose the ability to act flexibly and adaptably to situations. I'm often curious, who is talking to me about my templates and rules of happiness? Is it me or my mind? Is it this secret director who constructs these narratives using templates behind the scenes, just mostly out of conscious awareness? But sometimes they appear in the spotlight too. I call it the secret director because it's a metaphor. It acts like a director might. The director moves your gaze towards the film or narrative of our lives. The secret director decides the camera angles, brings in the thoughts and feeling actors, and probably writes the score too. The secret director writes the scripts and composes the production. It produces the stories of the mind that have some sense of continuation and consistency. Imagine the secret director processing all of the conscious and unconscious material and sculpting a seemingly consistent narrative or story. This story, or better yet, sets of stories, can then guide our attention and our focus, and then this in turn can drive our behaviour. Sometimes it is helpful to ponder, is this behaviour for the secret director or for me? I talk about this later on, but the secret director often wants to keep us safe, is fear orientated, risk avoiding, and works in the short term. When we make decisions and take action in the world, even when we really want something and it's value driven behaviour that we choose and for us is a long term investment, this secret director can appear to provide a scary narrative that warns things could go terribly wrong and that we will end up feeling bad. This can influence our decisions and our actions. Better safe than sorry. But at what cost? The secret director could be a right response at the wrong time. So in a sense, happiness isn't the truth. Well, it's not a truthful state. It could be a directed mindset that is often transient and suggestible to errors, in part constructed by the secret director. So let's now ponder primary and secondary pain together. Humans can experience a primary experience, let's say a sudden onset of happiness. Anyway, and I'm looking at a beautiful spring field in the golden hour of sunset with buttercups. There are horses, and then I not only feel happy, but then a secondary process kicks in. And the meta discourse can look something like this. I'm feeling happy and this is nice. And I'm sort of noticing and observing that. And my mind says, what a beautiful sunset. I wish there were alpacas here. I wish I was an alpaca. Okay, this is going slightly strange anyway. They always seem happy. Alpacas don't need to work. What a life. Will this happiness go? I've got work tomorrow. Oh, I forgot about that deadline. Why me? Why am I not happy? What is wrong with me? Why don't I deserve to be happy? End scene. So we're going to kind of roll now and the curtains close. In that moment, we've left the sunset and the horses and the buttercups and our gaze is directed inwards. Thoughts kind of connect to other thoughts and memories and wonderings, and then our feelings change in connection to those thought patterns and, of course, vice versa. Our systems kind of cascade in lots of different ways, multidirectional waves, if you will. And the secret director is showing up and redirecting our attention from this present moment experience, to other areas of inward experience. No wonder happiness can feel so transient. Let's introduce, from moving from a secret director to an observing kind of perspective. I've been told that comparison is the thief of joy. It's automatic, it's natural, and it often leaves us wanting. If we can be curious what triggered the comparison, rather than just following the comparison through, it might give us some space to reflect and slow that process down. Now, I went to Bologna for a short trip some years back, and I'm saying this not just to show off, but just to share with you that I was able to eat some pasta and drink wine in a piazza, and to be connected to a different space, probably one of the reasons that we travel. Right at the end of the trip, I had a quite challenging experience trying to get out of an airport parking space that was incredibly tight, and there was a bus right behind me full of customers waiting to go onto their planes and travel. It was full of people waiting to get onto their flights, and then I got lost trying to get out of the parking. I can tell you how stressed and angry I was. My mind was saying, I've ruined the trip, why can't I be happy? The secret director was guiding my attention to the story. The holiday had many wonderful parts, but due to the recency effect, where we remember the most recent things sort of more vividly, and the bias of selection, the lens was that the holiday seemed ruined in the moment. It felt very believable. Of course, it wasn't ruined. I'm trying to separate memory from emotional encoding and not see the globality of experience, but that it was the trip I had with all the emotional components that belonged there. When thinking about past experiences, the secret director tends to focus on aspects that were negative or painful because they stand out. These can then obscure recall. As I said earlier, the secret director often wants to keep us safe, is fear-orientated, risk-avoiding, and works in the short term. In a sense, it is biased. When recalling happiness, there's the sum and then there's the parts that make it. Which aspects weigh the judgment? Recency effects and negativity impacts and skew how we might remember and recall things, especially around happiness. I got the holiday I was meant to have, which was based on values and actions. Having unpleasant or negative feelings, if I can call them that, didn't mean the holiday was negative. And so we turn to social comparison and labels. I said earlier that happiness isn't the truth. Well, it's not a truthful state. It's a directed mindset that is often transient and suggestible to errors, and it's in part constructed by this secret director. You might have thoughts like this: this is not where I thought I'd be in my life, I'm doing things but they don't make me happy, I'm supposed to be happy. Humans seem to be inherently comparative. We compare all the time, sometimes we compare and despair, especially upwards, where we might feel worse off. This is when I compare myself against someone I perceive as more successful or rich, for example. Sometimes we compare ourselves downwards to people worse off, and then we might feel better for a bit. Despite our language capabilities and consciousness, we operate by simple comparative linguistic rules that have powerful implications for us and our mindsets. It's that secret director again, and the assumptions it makes. How we see ourselves, others, and the world is influenced by this. Sometimes we might feel jealous, and sometimes we might feel envy when we compare. Envy is coveting what another has from a place of absence. Jealousy often involves two people or more, or entities, competing for the kind of attention or resources of a third. Envy involves two people, whereas jealousy often involves three or more. An example of this could be when you received feedback and what that activates within us. Do we receive the feedback gladly, or feel sad or scared, angry, comparative, feel impostery or critical? Often it connects to how we see ourselves and how we compare ourselves, especially with performance-based self-worth. It can activate that compare and despair. I tend to focus on the critical points of things rather than on the good points. and feedback can change my relationship with the work, but it's the perception that changes, not always the ability. Comparison is very easily achieved and needs few elements. We need some comparison groups and an arbitrary value of measure that changes depending on what is being compared. That value measure can be happiness levels, for example, or grades, or wealth, or beauty. Happiness becomes comparative and competitive with ourselves and others. It becomes something to own and to store for later. It's also a discriminator of social value. We might feel we're breaking rules by not being happy. So, for example, the thoughts could include they're happier than me, they have more happiness than me, and again, I should be happy. So as we compare, we also tend to label. So how are we measuring success? And more importantly, for who are we measuring that success? How does happiness link to success? Is success about always being happy or pretending to be happy? What I like to call good old pseudo-happiness, smile for that social media post. We have labelled some experiences as good or bad. We want more of the good stuff and less of the bad stuff. But who has created those labels? What do the labels assume? We can't fully control happiness, but we've created a language of control, a language of desirability around it. As I've discussed before, happiness comes and goes, and the context is often more complicated than we initially perceive. Because we can't control a lot of things in the world, including our own internal states and experiences, although we try at all costs, we spend a lot of time trying to understand and trying to control happiness and other experiences. Happiness seems of value in the language of comparison, but at what cost? The takeaway from what I'm saying is that you're more than this narration or this story. You're not what you seem. Others and the world aren't always what they seem. You are more than what the secret director says. Think about how the secret director likes to socially compare us to others and also introduces these narratives and labels. There's a part of us, the observing part, that is unchanged by the critiques of the mind or the secret director. It can observe the mind, so it really isn't us at all. Also, everything we process is in the past. It's already happened with some slight processing delay. It's a projection to create consistency and constancy. The secret director is commenting on things already in the past, so they're not you. Remember to trust your experiences, not just your mind or the stories it tells you. Does this feeling or thought have your best interest at heart? How can this feeling or thought help you out?